Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/thedeltaflyers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, Robbie.
Hey, buddy. Hi.
So how are you? You okay?
I'm good.
The big day is tomorrow.
The wedding. Yes, it's a bit of an elopement COVID wedding. So getting married. Rebecca and I are getting married tomorrow.
Yeah.
Very exciting. And
your witness, you have actress from Resident Alien, right?
Yes, our good friend, Elizabeth Bowen, and her partner, Tim.
Love her character, by the way. Love her character.
Yeah, she's awesome. Mm-hmm. They're going to be our two witnesses and our officiant from the province of British Columbia, ordained by the Canadian government. And we will be a married couple tomorrow night. So I'm very excited. Although not much is going to change. It's just kind of like we keep watching our TV shows and lounging on the couch, and that's what we do. Take the dog for a walk. It's all, but it's good. It's very exciting. I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing this wedding, and because we're not doing a big wedding, we're planning on doing one maybe in a year, like a commitment ceremony with all the trappings of a wedding, mm-hmm. when everybody can gather safely. We're planning on doing that. But for now, we're just doing this very tiny thing.
Oh my gosh.
So we're just gonna probably have our wedding, our tiny little elopement wedding, and then we're gonna drink some champagne.
Sounds good.
We're gonna come back and have a nice meal from our favorite steakhouse here in town.
Sounds wonderful.
Gotham.
Well, pre-congratulations to you.
Thank you.
And for everyone who's listening, we're about a week ahead, so by the time you hear this or watch this, you can just say congratulations on social media to Robbie. So this week's episode, it's The Swarm.
Yes, it is.
And I think we should go watch this.
Let's go watch it.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
What was that look you just gave me?
I was like, do I remember this episode? We'll see.
That's for the next part. Okay.
So I know.
Patreon patrons, stay tuned for your bonus material. Hey guys, we're back from watching The Swarm.
Yes, it was a swarm. It was.
Swarmy. It was so
very swarmy.
Yeah.
There wasn't as much swarm as there was Doc in this. There was a lot of Doctor.
A lot of Doc.
Like, The Swarm is probably a bad title for this because it should be The Singing Doctor. That should be the title of this episode. I'm having some water just so I can sing.
As you,
because I may break out into opera at any moment. Yeah. I would like to offer you a haiku synopsis,
okay,
Garrett.
You.
Here we go. For the swarm. Tom and Torres flirt. The doctor is forgetting. Reset EMH. The swarm.
Nice.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice. Okay. Here we go.
Here's my
limerick straight from County Cork, straight from the files of Frank O'Hay, our set painter. How are you, Garrett?
Okay, here we go. Voyager encounters space controlled by the swarm. We must pass through without sounding the horn. We make a fast break. The doctor deteriorates. Inverse harmonics repel while the doctor returns to his norm.
Wow, you got a lot of information in that limerick.
I got a lot of info.
Boy, you did.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it takes me forever to do this. And you know how difficult it is to do it.
I know.
It's so damn tough.
Limericks are hard. We should have a limerick workshop, a Star Trek. You know what we should do?
Yeah,
because we didn't really start doing haikus and limerick synopses
Yeah.
Until well into our recap, we sort of got inspired and started doing that. And we missed, I don't know how many episodes, a dozen, two dozen episodes. We should go back and just do a special episode of poetry, just haiku limerick poetry.
The ones we missed?
Yeah.
Perfect. That's that
as, as an episode.
That'll be an episode.
Just a little deconstruction poetry breakdown.
Sounds good.
We should do a rap battle episode.
We should.
we're
going to freestyle? Oh my gosh. I'm so excited. We're going to freestyle battle. This. I love this.
I stink at freestyle, by the way.
You were pretty good that one time you freestyled. It was pretty
fun. I pretty much stink at it. No. Okay. But right, I'll do it.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to do it, guys. Okay. Directed by Alex Singer, written by Mike Sussman.
I think this may be the first script that Mike Sussman wrote.
It could be. It could be.
I think it is. Yeah. Because I noticed that and I was like, wait a minute, when did Mike Sussman start with us? It must have been season three because he was around. I think Mike was there till the very end. He was there for years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I liked Mike a lot. I thought he was really good.
Yeah.
And I feel like he was a student of Jerry Taylor's for some reason, or a protege of Jerry's. And then I think about Lisa Klink being a protege of Jerry's. You know, Jerry really took a lot of these young writers under her wing and mentored them. Michael Piller did the same thing. I know he had a whole scholarship fund at the University of North Carolina for aspiring television writers. So particularly Jerry Taylor and Michael Piller were these kind of mentor figures for so many writers. I don't know as much about Rick Berman. I'm trying to think. I feel like Brandon Braga was a bit of a protege of Rick Berman's in a way. Yeah. I think so. So yeah, I guess there is really a history of this kind of mentorship on Star Trek in a great way. Anyway, Mike Sussman.
Well, in the credits, it shows that Michael Piller is the creative consultant at this point. So I guess they were still kind of, you know, in contact with him at this point, even though his office is no longer on the Paramount lot. He's gone on to do his other stuff. So, or maybe that was just a credit in name only. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I feel like Michael Piller went off to do his own, pursue his own projects by in season three.
Yeah.
I don't remember him being around that much.
Yeah. And regarding writer Mike Sussman, I went to college with a Mike Sussman. So that always confused me. It was sort of like, what? Okay. Mike Sussman from college wrote this episode. Okay. And what we do know is a definite first on this episode. This is the very first time that the episode begins with the helmsman's log.
Yes.
Tom Paris.
I know.
Speaks his log.
I didn't remember that. And the very first moment that started, I was like, oh my God, I do. I remember seeing it in the script. I remember going to the ADR booth and recording this, this log and feeling really, I felt like that was a really cool thing. Like, to be able to do that.
Well, let me just say a couple of fun facts. Here's a couple of fun facts that Megan found. Number one, the official Star Trek Voyager magazine issue number 11, Robbie McNeil gave an interview about this particular episode.
Really?
So, yes. So even though you don't remember anything about this before we watched it, you definitely remembered a whole bunch when you were interviewed for issue 11 of the official Star Trek Voyager magazine. Fun fact number two that Megan found is that in that opening scene where Torres and Paris are in the shuttle, you guys are flying towards what looks like the Orion constellation that can be seen from Earth.
Wow. Yeah, so we were really close. We were so close to Earth. Holy crap. Why didn't somebody tell Janeway? We could have just taken a right, bear right, and you'll be home in like half an hour.
Okay. Oh, I said it looks like the Orion constellation.
Okay.
It wasn't really the Orion constellation. Okay. Yeah. Good one, though. Good. I like that. Yeah. Let's continue. Let's talk about this crazy flirtation going on.
Yeah. So Torres and I are out there to investigate some sensor readings, some weird sensor readings. We've been out there for 5 hours together in the shuttle and she really wants to give up and Paris wants to keep looking. And I like that he teases her about Ensign Bristow.
Yeah.
She's like, Freddie Bristow has a crush on me. Fine. Freddie Bristow. Who's Freddie Bristow?
Well, we do know he's attractive and he's tall and he's, you know, it sounds like Ayala, tall guy, good looking guy. It sounds like Ayala, but we've never seen Bristow or Bristro. No. Bristow or Bristro?
I thought it was Bristow.
Bristow. We never see this guy.
No.
Ever. Uh-uh. Right?
Uh-uh. Yeah. But he's got a crush on Torres and it makes, you know, Paris a little competitive there. And he asked her to go sailing on Lake Como.
Lake Como in Italy. Right? Yes. Isn't Lake Como in Italy?
It is. George Clooney lives there.
Yeah, the undercurrent of this episode is Italian. Lake Como. Very Italian. Holiday yes, program, singing Italian opera, the Italian diva opera singer. I mean, there's a lot of Italy going on in this episode.
And Torres says no. She turns Paris down.
She sure does. Uh-huh. She sure does. But you are a little bit jealous, I guess. Which is
maybe feeling a little competitive in that moment, but definitely... I think I do, after watching this episode, I do remember this scene and this episode being the beginnings. I think it's the first time where I think I said to the writers, hey, wait a minute, is there going to be something going on with Paris and B'Elanna? And I do remember now that we watched this, the writers kind of saying, yeah, we might develop something, but it's going to be very slow. I remember that they were like, you know, it's not going to be fat, like nothing's happening right away. And maybe there'll be a little something. We'll dance around this for a long, long time. So this was the beginning of that. Yeah.
This is the beginning of Tom and B'Elanna.
Yeah.
Or the hybrid name, Talana. Or the other way, Bomb. This is the beginning of Bomb.
Bomb. This is amazing. Yes. Okay. So we go to Sandrine's.
Yeah.
And the doc is singing opera. And... And by the way, I felt like the doctor with the hairpiece or wig that he was wearing, Robert Picardo, I felt like it looks a lot like a YouTube star, Alfonso, that some of our fans may know. He looked a lot like Alfonso. So for those curious, go check out YouTube's Alfonso, Love Advice from Alfonso. Looks a lot like the doctor singing opera.
Well, I think the reason why he looks a lot like Alfonso is because, from what I understood, that hairpiece was not provided by the hair department. That hairpiece was provided by Bob Picardo himself. So
yes, it was.
That is probably the exact same hairpiece that Alfonso wears.
I think it is. Because Bob had lost his hair very young in his 20s, mm-hmm. He had, for different movies and theater things, he had a collection of wigs or hair pieces and things in his house that he had kept. Every show that built one for him, he would buy it or keep it. So I remember once going to Bob's house and he was given a tour, you know, showing me his house. And he goes, oh, and here's my closet of wigs and hair pieces. And he opened up the closet door. And I feel like there must have been like 40 or 50, you know, wigs and hair pieces just sort of mounted. Like he had it very organized. It was like someone would go in to, you know, to try on a suit or something. Oh, I'm going to go in my closet and get a suit. He would go in his closet and he had all of these different looks, which was amazing as an actor to have that as a way of transforming. And I think that was Bob's hair piece.
It reminds me of an episode of Schitt's Creek. I don't know if you've seen that comedy, but Catherine O'Hara's character has all these wigs on the wall, basically in the room that they're staying in. And so mm-hmm. she has many, many, many hair pieces. Bob showed me a photo of himself from his Yale days back when he was in college, when he still had his hair. And my goodness, it is just this. Remember, this is in the 70s, right? So it's this huge, like
Afro. Almost.
Yes. It's like this Italian Afro that he has going on.
Yes.
It's just... very hair curly, on top thick. Of more hair. Yes. Yeah. Super curls and very lush. You know, it just looked like the Amazon jungle is what it looked like.
Yeah.
So yes, very different look for Bob. But you know, hair or not, Bob is, you know, Bob. I prefer him without the hair, to be honest. I'm not a big fan of hair pieces.
I know. It's just it's a strange look when you see him with the hair pieces of those full wigs. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he sings the opera, and it was a long operatic piece. It was not a small little piece.
No.
I feel like I remember I remember Bob. I feel like Bob is the one that had the idea for the doctor to sing opera. And I don't know if Bob had sung opera. I think he'd done musicals a bit. He has a wonderful singing voice, but I think this idea of like the doctor being a fan of opera and wanting to his character to sing was Bob's pitch. I remember Bob used to talk to the writers a lot about story ideas or, you know, things that maybe even with Zimmerman, like backstory of, of Zimmerman, why he created the EMH and all of that. Yeah, I feel like in this episode also, the term EMH was brand new. I don't think we had used that term before. I think we had called him the emergency medical hologram. I don't think anyone ever abbreviated it until this episode. I think this was the first time where we referred to him as the EMH.
And regarding the the inclusion of the doctor singing Italian opera, this is something that I've been talking about at Star Trek conventions forever. I talk about how that Bob Picardo was very persistent in his request for his character to sing opera.
Yeah, that's what, yeah.
He was calling the writers endlessly, and I always impersonate him and saying, "Hello, this is the doctor. I think the doctor should sing Italian opera. You know, this is Bob. I think that the doctor should sing Italian opera." And the writer's like, "No, Bob, we're not interested." Bring, hello, it's Tuesday. I think the doctor should sing Italian opera. No, that's not the direction we want to go in, Bob. Oh, that's fine. Hello, it's Wednesday. I think the doctor. So I do this as a bit, a shtick that I do on stage in talking about how persistence paid off.
Because oh, totally.
In my case, everything I suggested got shot down and I did not call
back. You have
back
to have persistence. I had persistence with directing and it paid off. I kept going back. That's a good lesson for all of us is that being persistent and don't give up. Yeah, I do remember that Bob was very much in communication with the writers about his character. Mm-hmm. I think Kate was with Janeway. I think she had a lot of conversations with them about mm-hmm. the character. Yeah, I think Ethan Phillips had some. I think Ethan may have pitched a story. We'll find out later on down the
road.
Did
you pitch anything?
I never did. No, I wish I had. I didn't. It really didn't occur to me as an option, but I know Bob did. Yeah. I know Kate did. I know Ethan did. I know Roxanne did. I think she pitched some stories.
And I think for you, Robbie, to be perfectly honest, you were too focused on directing. You weren't really focused on molding your character one way or another. You were focused on, I'm going to go and I'm going to hang out in the editing room. I'm going to sit in on the meetings because my ultimate goal is I'm going to direct an episode. And you were the first one to direct Voyager. So I
coming up soon, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah,
in our recap, it's coming up very soon. I think in the next couple episodes, we leave the doctor. He's called into sick bay, and B'Elanna seems fine. She's good to go, back to work. But Tom is near death over there. He's unconscious, and they've got to do a procedure. And so one lesson, and I feel like I remember this. Like, there's Tom again, getting injured and suffering. And I feel like last week we had the shoot and Tom was suffering and I feel like I remember this in season three, kind of saying to the writers, "Hey guys, like, is this going to be a pattern? Is Tom going to keep getting beat up and near death?" And I thought he was going to be an action hero. And I do remember feeling at this point, like, I don't want to lay in a sick bay bed. I also to that point, so Paris is almost dead. And then a few scenes later, we'll get there in a few minutes, but I got to say this, a few scenes later, he's sitting down there at the con looking
like
fabulous.
Nothing happened.
Like nothing happened. And I was like, wait a minute. What the, like, he was almost dead. Can he have a day off? Like, or shouldn't they talk about it? Or no, he's just back at work. Like, it seems like an hour ago.
You had one scene off is what you had, because we're on the bridge and Janeway's talking to Helm and it's a female voice. It's a disembodied voice that we hear. And she's like, "Okay, Helm, we need to do this." And you hear this female voice going, "Hi, Captain. This is that." So you're gone for that one scene.
One scene.
You come back. Yes.
I thought that you and Robert Beltran were going to have a
warp particles moment.
Yes.
In the briefing room? Is this the briefing room?
In the briefing room, yeah.
We're trying to figure out how to cross this border of these crazy aliens.
You both are like smiling. Yeah. Like, I think we can do this. I think we can.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really, when I was watching that, I'm like, man, I'm extra smiley in this scene. And
you
so
were.
Yeah. Yes. And this could have been really our off-camera life kind of creeping into our on-camera life in a way, you know, because Beltran and I were always joking around off-camera and hanging out because, let's face it, Robbie, you were so busy, you didn't have time for me back then.
I know. Poor guy.
I know.
But I think that's what I thought too, because you were both so smiley. I'm like, I think they were goofing around between takes and they were just like, something else was going on because it's a little too smiley for what you're actually saying.
Right. I agree. So I caught that too. All right. So after the briefing room scene, we go back to the sick bay and we realize the doctor cannot remember how to perform the operation on Paris. And I was thinking, I mean, this could be a lobotomy for Tom Paris. Yeah. He could end up being a vegetable. You know, you could be, what were you saying? That it was a vegetable and then a city name. So you could have been Artichoke Berlin after that, that lobotomy. Yes. Yeah. But thank God that Kes is there. Kes actually knows everything. Literally, Kes is now so well, she has studied so much that she could literally take over the doctor's job. And that's
what was great. It was very well directed, I thought, by Alex Singer, because the doctor started at the, you know, at the head of the bed and he couldn't remember the procedure. And as he asked for help and sort of fumbled, Kes goes into action and steps away from the nurse's position to get some tools. And then the doctor sort of wanders over and you realize by the end of the scene that they've swapped places and that Kes is now in the doctor position and he's in the nurse position. I thought that was very well, a nice detail that Alex staged in the scene.
Yeah. Did you notice how, so after the scene continues in sickbay and now there's a conversation between B'Elanna, Janeway and Kes.
Yes.
And Janeway's just like, okay, just reinitialize him, you know, forget about all of his memories. And Kes is the one that was like, wait. But that whole scene, after watching that, I'm just watching Jennifer Lean going, my God, what a tour de force. Kes could be the captain. I mean,
I made the same note. I said, she seems incredibly strong and mature. She had a maturity and a presence that I was like, God, Jennifer Lean was great in that scene.
She killed it. She
really,
killed it.
I mean,
I was so impressed. And of course, you know, her lifespan is only what, 6 years or something like that.
So she's already becoming a senior citizen.
Yes. She's already, she's kind of already in the old folks home at this point. So her dreams of being a captain will never be realized, unfortunately, but my goodness, Jennifer Lean really just, she knocked that out of the park. That scene.
Yeah,
I was so impressed with her. My God. Back on the bridge. So Harry finds a way. He finds a way that there's a, I'm just going to read what I say. This is going to be my techno babble for this episode.
Okay.
Their sensor net uses a series of interlaced tachyon beams. If we adjust the shields to refract those beams around the ship, we can slip across without appearing to disrupt the net.
Ooh. Whoa, nice. As smooth as your idea is, Tuvok is like,
He's not pleased at all.
Tuvok does not like it. He's like, this breaks Starfleet rules. If they don't want us to enter their space, we should not do it. That's protocol.
Yeah, because that's what he said in the earlier scene in the briefing room, right? Yep. He's the one that brings it up to Janeway. He's like, Captain, do you think this is... And Janeway looks at him like, no, we're so far away. I mean, she literally just says, forget to hell with Starfleet protocol. We don't care.
Crazy because typically Janeway is all about protocol.
And
in this episode, she just throws it all out the window. Which seems
because of the
crazy.
15 months, right? Because of the 15 extra months to get around this part of space to get away from these aliens. That's why she just throws
Starfleet. It's very risky.
The window. It is.
Very, very
and shocking.
Risky.
And shocking at the same time.
I agree. Right? And at the end of the scene, there's like this camera push in on Tuvok as he watches.
Yeah.
You know, Janeway's like, that's when Janeway, I think, says, Helm, take us to the border. Like, you know. Let's go. Let's do this. And there's a push in. Tuvok's like, He's not happy. Yeah.
What's the next scene that we have?
Well, Torres is trying some things in sick bay at this point.
With the doc.
Yeah. Which I love the fact that they've got Torres and the doc together. I think they're a hilarious cop duo, and I wish we saw more of them together.
That was a nice combo. And and you're right, that is a very rare combo as well. We don't see that pairing of series regulars.
Yeah.
So definitely good to see that.
I thought it was great. Roxanne, it makes Roxanne lighter and funnier. Torres as a character, lighter and funnier, I think, to be in those scenes. So she's trying to run some diagnostics. And then she goes, wait a minute, we need a second opinion. And so you see her go down to the holodeck and she opens up the Jupiter Station diagnostic program. And there we meet the holographic recreation of Louis Zimmerman.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now, Robbie, this is where I thought that, because earlier when we were talking about, my God, who is the familiar holographic character that, you know, we were trying to figure this out, and you suggested Barclay. So I thought, oh my God, this is where Barclay's going to pop in, actually. That was my first thought, because you kind of put that in my head. But no, it's Louis Zimmerman, a.k.a. Robert Picardo, once again.
With a whole new look. Now he's had the wig, singing opera, he's had his normal look, now he's got a different look. I have to say, first of all, I thought Alex Singer did a great job staging these scenes with the split screen, because you've got to have Bob Picardo playing both Zimmerman and the doctor. And that's not easy to do these kind of scenes and stage them in a way that feels organic and real, because you have to film them separately. So Bob did a great job acting with probably a stand-in or or an eye line. For those split screens, I thought it was really well done. So I think, you know, I'm sure Marvin Rush, our DP, had a lot to do with, you know, figuring out how to do this. Dan Curry, the whole visual effects department, figuring out the split screens and things like that. But I thought it was really well done. I also thought that Bob Picardo did a beautiful job of differentiating the doctor. I've heard him before say the doctor, because he's a computer program, doesn't fumble with, you know, ums and doesn't fidget, doesn't do things. The doctor is a computer program. He's a robot in a sense. He's precise. His language is precise. Mm-hmm. He doesn't stumble in his pattern of speech or or hmms or any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. He doesn't itch himself. You know, nothing is accidental with the doctor. Mm. And I saw his work, Bob's work as Zimmerman, and it was very human. I loved it. I thought it was great because he did have Zimmerman kind of messier and, you know, nervous tics or ums, or his speech pattern was very naturalistic. And I thought it was really great for Bob to differentiate those characters. And
definitely. And I would just want to reemphasize kudos to Alex Singer and the production team for really making that split screen quite seamless. I mean, you weren't jarred out of watching this episode while watching that. Everything flowed very smoothly. So, that's a tribute to Singer and the production team.
Yeah, great team.
For sure.
They have the scene at Jupiter Station, and Zimmerman comes up with a solution to when he realizes he's been running for 2 years. He was never intended to run that long. He wants to reinitialize the program, but he says that, you know, that'll completely start him over, that everything that's happened for the last 2 years will disappear, and he'll start back to where he's started. Zimmerman says, let's reinitialize. And if you reinitialize, he will probably forget everything that's happened in the last 2 years. And Torres is like, no, we can't. I can't accept that right now. She says to Zimmerman something like, you know, if you had a patient, you'd find out the sickness. You know, you'd find out why the circuits are degrading or why the sickness is there. You try to, you know, solve that problem. So she sort of takes a beat on the whole kill him and restart him kind of solution. Meanwhile, we go and we find Kim and Chakotay analyzing this map of this part of space. And they have an idea that we can, you know, create this deflector deflect the sensors and we can sneak through this narrow path. And Tuvok really doesn't. He's more of Tuvok, like, he's not happy about it.
And we go ahead and we enact this plan that Harry and Chakotay come up with. And here is the line. I've mistakenly assumed that this line has come from the episode Eye of the Needle, which is season one, where we find the tiny wormhole and the futuristic Romulan played by Von Armstrong. And I, for years at Star Trek conventions, I talk about the strangest line that Harry Kim has ever said. And I say, it's from that episode. And that Captain Janeway says, did the probe go through? And I answer, like a snake through a tube. Okay. But that is not from Eye of the Needle. And
no, I remember.
It's from this episode. One of the fans pointed that out to me. They said, no, it's not from that episode. It's from The Swarm.
It was a weird line.
Yeah, it's a weird line because we basically put into effect the plan that we have come up with to get through the sensor net. And I say, I think we did it, Captain. Like a snake through the tube. I don't even say a tube. I say the tube. Like a snake through the tube. Which again, do snakes like tubes? Do they go through them a lot?
Yeah.
What the heck?
I don't know. It's a weird metaphor that you come up with.
So weird.
Yeah.
So we try the plan. It works for a second and we go to warp. But guess what? There's a resonant particle wave that is damping our warp field. So we're losing speed.
It's a drag on the engines. That's right.
Drag on the engines. And we have to figure out what the heck is going on. And I must say, I am very happy with Kim's hair in this episode. Kim's hair looks great. I'm really
happy. Oh, nice. Yeah,
this is good. A good hair episode.
Good hair episode. Well, that's what matters the most, Garrett, as we all know.
Jupiter Station, right? We're back into that.
Yes, we're back there.
Simulation. This is where Doc does not know who Kes is. He's actually deteriorated to the point that he forgot who Kes is.
Well, it was beautifully done because Kes goes in and Zimmerman says, like, the doctor doesn't speak much. And Kes is going in there and telling Zimmerman all these qualities of the doctor and their friendship and all. And Zimmerman's like, oh, yeah? Well, if he's your friend, let's see. Hey, Doc, do you know this woman? Is this your friend? And he looks at her and goes, no, I don't know who she is. Such a sad moment. It was very sad to me. I really was moved.
It's sad for me too, because, you know, when I was young, my grandfather developed Alzheimer's, and it was just, as you see someone that you know, that you're related to, that you're close with, that you've admired or you've looked up to your entire childhood, and then you start seeing that person's mind slowly but surely get worse and worse. And this literally for me was like a bit of a you know, it really stirred up those memories for me. And it was difficult for me to watch that. So,
yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. I can imagine. It's a horrible disease, Alzheimer's. And I think Bob did a beautiful job in this episode of doing a science fiction version of that. And I think, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to it. And I think it was a great idea from the writers to do the story. So by the way, we go back to the bridge. Okay. We go back to the bridge and Janeway is talking about telling a story of when she was a kid or something.
Oh yeah.
She used to sneak out and Paris says something like,
why'd you sneak out or something? Right.
Yeah. Could I guess where you snuck out to, Captain? What the frick? That's like snakes through a tube. It's like,
That was so bizarre.
What was he implying with that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Were you being creepy? What were you doing?
It seemed like I was being creepy.
Yeah. It was kind of like,
yeah. Yeah. I'd like to guess where you snuck out to, Captain. Bet you got some nasty stories.
What are you doing later, Captain?
Maybe yeah.
We can sneak out together. We can sneak. Hey, Captain. Tom, I just want to sneak out with you at some point. What do you think?
All right, so talking about that, Paris gets a little creepy.
Wait a minute. I'm going to stop you for a second.
What?
Maybe that line happened because Torres turned you down for the Lake Como thing.
Right? Oh, yeah.
So then you thought, all right, maybe I'll flirt with Captain Janeway again.
Could be.
We had a little flirtation before the prior episode in a shuttle. So
All right. So then we see a ship on sensors. We get a little closer and the ship is beat to crap. It has been damaged very severely. They scan for life signs, one survivor, and Janeway says, beam him to sick bay. So this alien Chardas is in sick bay.
What's his name?
Chardas, I think. Is that it? That's what I wrote down.
But when you first said it, you said shart.
Chardas?
Which is, you know what shart, that is.
Chardas.
Yeah. When you try to.
Yes.
Yeah, you know.
Okay. We all know what Chardas is.
I was like, that's a horrible name for an alien.
Chardas was a Mislin or Mislin alien.
I didn't even
He's
get
from
his
Mislin.
Name.
I wrote that down. I noted that as we. Yeah. But anyway, they were attacked by swarm vessels. He's dying. He says, tell my people what happened to us, you know. And then he dies. But I got to say, that was a bad makeup alien. That was just, it looked like a clown. It was just, it was colorful. It was red and green and yellow.
Well, the red was when he was, that's when he was being beat up and stuff.
It just didn't look good. It didn't look good to me. And I love Michael Westmore and our whole team, but that one just looked not great.
Well, you said he's from this. What did you say? Mislin is what you said?
Mislin is what I wrote down. Mislin?
Because when he's on the bed and he's talking to Janeway, it sounds like, I kept rewinding it. It sounds like he says, I come from this, it sounds like Island, but he says, but then
after rewinding
it, it sounded like I come from this land that is, you know, far, far in the yellow dwarf system.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so that's what Megan and I heard. We heard this land instead of Misland, but maybe it is Misland.
Okay. I don't know. He's dead, and we're probably not going to go by there, so. Because we're going to, the swarm's going to attack us, and we're all going to die. I don't want to, no spoilers.
And the doctor is further deteriorated. He says, you know, he's a sick man. This is where sick people come. And he's completely.
It was very funny. It was adorable and sad at the same time.
And sad at the same time. It was adorably sad.
Yeah, and Kes is very sad. And it's just sad. Yeah, the doctor is losing his memory and he's dying in a sense. He's deteriorating. So let's see. We go back to the bridge and the universal translator is not working because one of these ships, sorry, I skipped a beat, but one of these shuttles that was attached to that damaged ship detaches. They didn't notice that before. Right. It detaches.
Detects us.
Yep.
Sends a polaron burst, which changes our shield polarity. So now we're like a Christmas tree, according to Chakotay. Yep. Everyone can see where we're at.
Lit up like a Christmas tree.
Yeah, it takes off back to the rest of the swarm, and now they are in, you know, they are in full pursuit. They know that we're there. Those little ships, what did it look like to you? What did those little ships look like to you?
They look like pill bugs or something to me. They look like little insects.
Like roly-polies?
Roly-polies, yeah.
Or maybe even like a horseshoe crab, you know, kind of like that kind of segmented body. Uh-huh. Yeah, it was, yeah. But roly-poly is a good way. I wonder if other people call it roly-poly in other parts of, like in England.
Pill bug, roly-polies.
Do they say roly-poly? That's definitely an American thing, I think.
I don't know. I think roly-polies and pill bugs are aliens who came from another planet, by the way.
You stand by that?
I do. I stand by that. Yep. Roly-polies are aliens.
Hey. All right. So we head to engineering where B'Elanna is trying to realign the dilithium matrix. Uh-huh. And Janeway's like, look, we don't even have time. We need to do this while we're traveling at warp. So B'Elanna freaks out. She says to Nicoletti, hey, we got to figure out a dilithium realignment on the fly, which is without killing everybody. So, you know, a hard task for engineering, but I think B'Elanna's up to it. So she's going to figure something out. Then we jump back to sick bay where Kes is trying to keep the doctor from leaving sick bay because he doesn't even know that he has, you know, he's a holographic projection. He thinks he can just walk out, right? Yeah. He can't do that. And it's, again, very sad to watch this constant deterioration of all of his synapses.
And he sort of is having memories, some memories in this scene, but it's a classic sort of Alzheimer's kinds of situation of random scattered memories that are sort of mixed up and not quite right. And I thought Bob did a great job and so did Jennifer Lean did a great job. And Kes goes and begs for help on the bridge. And
she asks for Harry. She goes, can Harry come? Cause you know, Harry knows this kind of stuff, right?
But we're in the middle of a battle. And you know how I know that? Because Janeway's hair is falling down. Clearly, we must be in battle because the hair is coming down. So
it was like one shake, and that hairstyle just fell right out. It was like clunk, it was gone. Go ahead. So Janeway's hair is falling down. The swarm is gaining. Jupiter Station, we go back there to the holodeck mm-hmm. program with Jupiter mm-hmm. Station, where Cass is the one who comes up with the brilliant idea of grafting Zimmerman's matrices onto the Doctor. Mm-hmm. So sort of a last ditch effort. And kudos to Kes. My goodness. I mean, look how smart she is, right?
By the way, in the Jupiter Station scene, I did notice the prop that Bob Picardo was using as Zimmerman. Mm-hmm. I never saw that prop before. It was like a pad, but it was larger and just a stranger shape. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder if what the history of that pad was, maybe to other shows, to Next Gen or... Because often we would use props sometimes from other shows that didn't fit in our timeline or in our space. And so I don't know. I just thought that was interesting. An unusual pad.
Yeah.
That we'd be working on.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't notice that, but I will have to watch that again. Mm-hmm. Now, when we're back on the bridge, when we go back to the bridge, mm-hmm. we come across a very tongue twister technobabble phrase. We figure out that these swarm-like ships are emitting interferometric pulses, an interferometric pulse, which causes everything we do to kind of bounce right back onto us. So we're not sure what to do about that, mm-hmm. but at least we know that is the issue.
We know what's going on. Yeah, and that swarm was scary looking. All those pill bugs.
It looked like a gaseous anomaly from Tuvok. Frankly.
Yes, it did. But almost as scary. Not quite as scary as that, but almost. We go back to sick bay and we're preparing for this Matrix overlay program and reboot and stuff. But I got a question. Who is the guard in the room? Like, why is there this guard by the door? I don't know if you noticed that, but I was like, we never have guards.
Yes.
I mean, maybe if there's like an alien in sick bay that we've arrested or something like that. But I was like, why? That seemed like a very random thing. Anyway.
Do you think Kes requested that guard to help her wrangle the Doctor?
Maybe.
From kind of like leaving or trying to leave again, you know?
Maybe.
But it was odd. I saw her standing there. I was like, why? Okay. Yeah. She is definitely a member of the security. She's a security member, mm-hmm. right? She's wearing the gold, which mm-hmm. is security. It made no sense to me either.
Yeah, it seemed strange to me too. Mm. Yeah. So while that's the reboot's happening and the swarm's clamping on and they're forming a lattice and mm-hmm. aliens start beaming onto our bridge,
our ship,
and we fight them off hand to hand combat.
Yeah.
In fact, Paris takes a big dive at one of them and knocks him down, and then Janeway steps around and bam.
Yes,
that was kind of cool.
Yeah, and you're skipping a beat. Harry discovers the pattern. Harry discovers the pattern on the interferometric pulse, that it is a lattice. They're connected to each other. So if we do one thing, if we take out one ship, it should explode the other ships around it. And then, of course, Tuvok, the party pooper, he says, hey, but that'll just bounce it right back to us if we try to destroy the one ship. But then Janeway
comes up with her brilliant idea.
Right. So
reverse the polarity or something.
Yes. And that idea is, you know, really smart to basically inverse the harmonics of the shield so that.
There you go.
Yeah. So we will end up being able to actually shoot that alien ship. I want to bring this up. When you tackled him.
Yes.
I do find that this is more of an American thing. Okay. Like, for instance, like something that you used to do to me, like when we were not on camera, like at craft service, you would do this. You'd kind of like just kind of with both of your hands, palms open, you'd shove me. You just kind of shove me out of the blue. You were weird. Like, I don't know. Like, you would do that a lot. And it was sort of like a big brother teasing a little brother. And you just kind of shoved me. And I go, hey. And like,
I do remember this now. I forgot. Yeah,
and I didn't say anything to you. I'd be sitting there grabbing something to eat. And you'd come up and you'd look at me. And you wouldn't even say hi to me. You just go, bam. And I think part of it was like you were thinking, God. You single lucky bastard, you. You don't have to worry about kids or, you know, family. Yeah, you were mad at me subconsciously. So you gave me that little poop.
Well, I dove at the alien and then we, you know, we come back. They do back in sick bay, Cass is nervous, but she does activate the EMH. This is where we call it the EMH for the first time, I think. He does not recognize Kes. B'Elanna, he says, is someone sick? You know, why are you activating me? Is someone sick? And B'Elanna fakes a headache. She's like, yes, I've got a headache. And he comes over. He's like, I don't know, but okay, I'll prescribe you something. And they're both sort of sad. Torres and Kes both feel like, okay, well, he's lost all his memory.
Yeah.
And he walks around in the other room and you hear him preparing the medicine. And he starts humming, singing the opera.
Opera. Yeah.
And it was beautiful. It was beautifully
very touching.
Yeah. I thought it was great. Moment. So I think it's very open-ended. Like, obviously he remembers something, but I'm curious to see as we watch the next few episodes, if they deal with this much, like his memories coming back, or do we just jump back to him already completely,
restored.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's going to be the latter. He just jumps back to being the regular doctor.
I think it is too. I have a feeling it will be, but that was kind of the structure of our show.
What is your lesson, Robbie, from this episode? What's your lesson/theme?
My lesson/theme is, I guess on one hand, it's a question. It's like, how important are memories and how do those memories shape who we are now today? Because that's sort of what the doctors, to me, that's the heart of the swarm and those aliens, whatever, that's a fine, you know, ship story, but the doctor's story is the emotional core of the episode. And you know, everyone really wanted the doctor to keep his memories because that made him who he was. And so I guess on one hand, it's like, how important are those memories? And clearly in this story was saying they're very important.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And the other lesson for me is, like, meaningful experiences that we have in life are never truly lost, no matter how much time goes by, no matter how much we may, just like for our years on Star Trek, like our years making Voyager, 7 years, there's a lot of things. I know it's a joke that I say, oh, I can't remember, but I know somewhere in my subconscious, those experiences are still very much alive. And they're part of what makes me who I am today, whether I can consciously remember every detail or not. That would be my lesson. Yeah.
I like that. And I'm going to suggest, we've already discussed compiling all of our haikus and our limericks into a book form at the end of this whole review of all the Voyager episodes. I also suggest that we include the life lesson/theme from each episode that both of us talk about. I mean, that's
a great idea.
That'd be a nice little filler. There is a lot
so
of
many
good
lessons. So many. I mean, that's what at the heart of Star Trek, that's what it does best is kind of reflect on the human experience in a really profound way, in a way that we can all relate to. So,
My lesson or theme is related to this episode, but more indirectly and more about Bob Picardo off camera. And the fact that Italian opera was utilized was, in my opinion, because of his persistence. And I do believe that that is the lesson for this episode, is that you must have persistence. You must engage in persistence. Because let's face it, life doesn't always hand you a bed of roses. You know, there's a lot of times it hands you lemons and you gotta, and what do you do with those lemons? You can either just sit there and scrunch up your face as you're eating them, or you can turn that into lemonade. And and the persistence is really turning into lemonade. You've got to keep on that path until you get what you need. And really, Bob Picardo did that. I didn't, you know, I didn't follow that path. I asked, or I pitched an idea for Harry. And when it was shot down, or there was no interest, I took that as a no, and I never tried again. And you know, I mean, and a lot of times, this will happen in life. You know, someone will say, "Gosh, I would love to, I would love to be a ballet dancer. And then someone will say, well, you're too tall for that. Or you're too, you know, fill in the blank. And they'll say, you're right. Mm-hmm. I quit. I'm not going to try it. So really, persistence is a really good quality.
The captain said, let's just reboot the doctor initially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if Kes had not been very persistent, if Jennifer Lean had not been as strong, mm-hmm. and committed to finding a better solution, and Torres, and all of that, we wouldn't have had the doctor. He would have been started over as a whole new person.
Exactly. So, there you go.
Speaking of the doctor, so this was a great recap.
Yep.
For our patrons, stick with us. We've got Mr. Robert Picardo to share some of his memories on The Swarm and this episode in our mm-hmm. bonus material. For everybody else, thanks. We'll see you next week for our next episode. Do you know what the next episode is?
Yes, it's called False Prophets. So stay tuned for next week's episode, False Prophets. All right, guys, thank you so much. Patreon patrons, stay tuned.
See you soon.